Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Daniel Baker. Joining us today, we have Sheldon Hendricks, Senior Vice President and Compliance Officer at First Community Bank. Sheldon is an experienced professional with a successful career in banking and consulting, focusing on financial institution regulatory compliance. With over 22 years in banking and 19 working directly in regulatory compliance and risk management for companies like First Community Bank, BKD LLP, and First Liberty National Bank, Sheldon has developed skills in understanding bank regulatory compliance affecting all financial institution operations, including lending, operations and deposits, BSA and AML, privacy, fair credit reporting, credit cards, fair lending, and UDAP. Sheldon, welcome to the show.
Hi, my pleasure.
Sheldon, I would like to get started by asking my guests, how did you get started in the banking industry? I mean, it's a wide industry, so many different avenues into the banking world. How did you get started?
Well, I started whenever I was 17. I grew up in a small town outside of Houston called Liberty. So I started my career at First Liberty National Bank. The truth of the matter is I wanted to make some money and not spend as much time at school. So I joined co-op. My first year in banking was as a teller. And I just never got out. It's one of those things. You just kind of fall into it.
Yeah, so banking really was like your beginning. Banking was your career from the very start.
I have only worked in financial services and banking.
Oh, that's fantastic. And you started as a teller then, so you were keen transactions, coding transactions, everything like that. So
yep.
So you've been through kind of all the different elements of the banking world.
Uh-huh.
Then.
Yeah. So I moved from there to data processing and then accounting, and then I took a vacation, and they had a national exam where they had been highly recommended several exams in a row to get a compliance officer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sharp, but young and naive.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of how I fell into compliance.
Just an interesting transition there. So you just kind of put your name forward, said, hey, I'd be interested in this position, and hadn't had any experience in compliance yet.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. And so my bank president at that time, I love the guy to death. He was so hard on me for like 10 years straight. Mm-hmm. He was like, you're going to have to do a lot of reading. And I was like, whatever. And I was like, I'm good at reading. And so I didn't realize what that meant.
Yeah.
That took me a few years to figure out what that really meant. But that's kind of how that started.
So then how did you learn compliance? Because, I mean, did you tutor under someone? Did you train someone? Or literally you built your bank's compliance department from the ground up? Like what were you doing?
I did at that bank. I did. So I spent a lot of time on Bankers Online back then. So this is like circa 2004. And back in those days, there was a bunch of old fogies on there, great guys, but they were the types of folks that you couldn't even talk to them unless you could quote scripture.
Yeah.
You know, you had to be able to go through complex arguments with citations and circular references and all that stuff. So, you know, I learned very early on the hard way how to read and interpret regulations and go straight to the source, go back to the statutes, interpret guidance, apply it in a pragmatic way. And because I had such a good mentor, the president there, and he was so tough on me, it was always figure out how to make this work in a way that makes sense.
Right.
And that was basically, you know, for the first 8 years of compliance or so, it was like, you're going to figure out how to make this work in a way that makes sense for regular people.
Yeah.
And that's always been my mantra because, you know, whenever I do compliance throughout the bank here, we were discussing this before we started recording, but what I was explaining to you earlier is I have to do monthly presentations for my board. And one of them is an annual presentation where I talk about the structure of compliance. And in it, there's always a trick question. And it says, how many employees are in the bank's compliance department?
Mm-hmm.
And almost everyone always gets it wrong, except for one of the attorneys on the board. But the answer is always all of our employees.
Yeah.
Okay, because if you've done this long enough, you know that
compliance.
Nobody that administrates compliance actually does it, because we don't do transactions.
Right. Yeah.
So we have to layer it in throughout the bank, and you know, you have to look at it from the perspective of regular people. Okay, so I've got this mandate I'm looking at. It's really complicated. Mm-hmm. We're trying to figure out how to do this, you know, strategic thing. How am I going to make it work?
Mm-hmm. So how do you? So give me an example. So pick a regulation, like one that maybe you've seen a lot of success doing that with. What regulation is it, and how did you really make that work where the average employee is accomplishing the tasks and goals and responsibilities that they have to fulfill that obligation?
Any one of them, you name it. So everything is so systematic these days. You could say Reg Z, for instance, mm-hmm. but that's fairly systematic. Those are set and forget regs. Once you tailor into the systems and you do all your monitoring and auditing and, you know, everything, and you do all your feedback loops, that stuff's, you know, you kind of set it up, and then until an audit or monitoring reveals something, you don't really have to deal that much. So those are systems issues, but people issues are things like maybe Regulation B or flood.
Right.
And so I think the best way is to not have an absolute perfection mindset.
Okay.
So we've got like 25 loan officers and 5 mortgage loan originators and just as many loan assistants. There are certain things on the front line you can't make systematic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You just can't. And so there's the human part of it. And you've got to figure out a way to almost allow errors to happen. And through your monitoring and auditing, and we have a very robust monitoring system that I've trained my staff over years how to find these things. When these things slip through that are technically violations or what have you, you always use those as teachable moment opportunities. Okay. And then when you have periodic meetings with groups of people, like, you know, we have quarterly meetings with ops people or loan assistants, you use all of these examples and you say, okay, you know, these things have come up. And you don't point fingers at anyone, but they're always in the group and they know they did it. And there's a little social psychology there too, because they're like, they don't want to let you down because you built a tremendous rapport with them.
Right.
And that's part of the formula too, is just having such a good rapport with everyone to where they understand if I screw something up that causes a compliance issue, it's the bank's responsibility, but I'm also going to be letting these folks down that are trying to be my safety net.
Yeah.
And you don't have this authoritarian mindset about it. And that's a big pitfall with a lot of compliance folks I think it's just, you know, the profession does attract a certain personality type, but you have a lot of people in this space who have an authoritarian mindset, and that's never a winning formula. Mm-hmm. It doesn't accomplish anything. You have to be able to recognize errors and use them to, you know, re-engineer the system whenever you find them, whether it's systems or people. And then, you know, you're just constantly refining. It's a constant state of refinement.
So really, really what you're getting at, if I'm understanding you correctly, is that effective compliance is the recognition that, you know what, things aren't always going to be perfect. I mean, that's why a compliance department exists in the first place, right? To run those audits, to determine where the weakness and failures are, and then really to create an environment where you can provide constructive feedback to the managers or the individuals involved in those specific situations, and you can communicate with them. Mm-hmm. And then they realize and you realize that ultimately, like, this is for the betterment of the bank so far as it comes to to following regulation and state law statutes and everything like that. So
it's just an understanding, you know, it's the big picture. Like, ultimately, we're all fiduciaries to our shareholders, mm-hmm. right? And so it's also getting people to understand, like, these mistakes, because you always hear an excuse and you got to let them air it out. But it's always, you know, I was busy, this, and that. And it's like, I know, but this is incumbent upon the bank, and auditors and examiners don't see it as you having a bad day.
Right.
And you eventually have to get them to understand that. You know, it's like, hey, every 3 years, the FDIC comes in here and they do a really serious compliance exam.
Yeah.
I'd like for things to be fairly clean, because that, you know, that represents the bank. And our board members and our shareholders care tremendously about our posture of compliance.
Mm-hmm. So then how do you address those errors? So let's say something's coming up with one of the more regulations that's not Center for Yet. So let's take ECOA, so the Equal Credit Opportunity mm-hmm. Act Regulation B. So let's say something's coming up and there's a Regulation B issue and you audited it, things have come forward. What's your next step? What do you do after identification of that error?
Well, you always have to do a root cause analysis and figure out, okay, so it always boils down to systems and people. And so you just kind of re-engineer the whole process. And so usually I start from the back to the front, and you start with processors and back office, and then you move on up to the front and you try to find where it happened and mm-hmm. what caused it. And so if it's isolated, you just talk to people.
Yeah.
And if you find a system issue, you talk with the managers who are in charge of that system and you get them to change the parameters.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's a slow, boring process, yeah. but it is, like I said, it's a constant state of refinement. You know, it's a whole life cycle, and you just go with the flow. You know, we have an inordinately low volume of errors, i.e. violations, but that's because we have spent so much time refining things.
Yeah.
And we don't have the best systems in the world, and maybe not the best people. I mean, I think our people are great, but with respect to, you know, people are people and they make mistakes. And mm-hmm. so when they deal with things on the front line, internal controls are internal controls, and they mess up on internal controls all the time, but they forget which ones are compliance and which ones are just for
bank policy.
Yeah. You know, everything else.
Yeah.
And you have to remind them that whenever they flub up on a issue that causes compliance, you're like, that caused a violation of law. And it helps whenever you know how to quote the reg and be like, this is what you're looking at.
Yeah.
Like it, you know, and you don't rub it in their face, but you're just like, it does say that.
Yeah, we need to do better at this point. I agree.
And it helps reinforce, because nobody likes that V word.
Right.
Nobody likes to hear that. But whenever you have to say it, it's like, oh, yeah, there's a federal law behind it.
There's a reason why we do what we do.
Yeah.
So then let me ask you, earlier you mentioned something about a feedback loop. You were talking about mm-hmm. how, like, set and forget it regulations, like potentially Regulation Z, where so much of it is just systematic. Like, yeah, you get an application, you send out an LE, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
What's an effective feedback loop for these regulations? Or what do you mean by feedback loop?
Well, whenever I say feedback loop, so like I said, we have a pretty robust system of monitoring. We're always trying to catch things as much as possible in real time. So you got to look at compliance like a diagram, and we're sitting outside of the infrastructure. And by the time we find things in compliance, usually they have already occurred.
Yeah.
So you're already dealing with something that happened.
Right.
And so what I mean by feedback loop is, so you can, I'm not big on PowerPoint trainings, not saying that they don't have their place. I'm not saying that I don't do a lot of them,
right.
but a lot of training can be accomplished. So you take care of that with all of your quarterly and, you know, your all of that stuff that you, every bank uses for online training, but, and that's good and all, but when we deal with things that crop up in the monitoring and auditing, it's usually just, okay, this happened. let's go talk to the folks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you usually start with a manager and then you work your way down to a supervisor mm-hmm. and then you work your way down to the staff. And, you know, that's what I would say the continuous feedback is. And you do it in a very diplomatic way. And again, whenever you've had time to spend time to build a rapport with all these people that you work with, there's a sense of, oh, I don't want to let that guy down. I don't want to let that department down. They're always saving us. They're always keeping us in line. You know, it helps to build your credibility. So they understand that there's a reason we're doing this and that we're here to protect them, not to wag our finger at them.
Right. So then how big is First Community Bank? How many staff members do you have at First Community Bank?
We're right under 200.
Okay.
I think around 175, asset size, 700 million, 11 branches throughout the Coastal Bend. Just to give you some context, we're a boutique real estate bank. Mm-hmm. We have about 200 properties in a flood zone at any given time.
Okay.
Servicing. We have a humdalar that hovers around 400.
Okay.
Declining due to market.
Yeah.
We have a mortgage department, but we also have a pretty robust commercial real estate production as well. Yeah. So, you know, we do TRID on two sides of the bank. We have TRID over in our mortgage. We also do land and construction loans on the retail side.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for a bank our size, we got a lot going on from a risk profile perspective. And I've been saying this for years because back in the day, everybody used to just talk about asset size like it was the sole factor that you could, you know, kind of back your risk profile into. And I was like, no, it's your product, services, geography, and everything else. And we all intuitively understand that now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, just from the perspective of fair lending, we're here in the Coastal Bend. So, you know, we have the majority of our market is minority because of where we're located.
Yeah.
You know, we have to stay on the up and up there. You know, thankfully whenever I was in consulting, I spent a lot of time doing fair lending evaluations and things like that. So I know how those things work fairly well. And so we've got a lot of emphasis on fair lending. And just because it's good business, you know, it is traditional. Reg B is good for business. But, you know, we have to, you know, stay on our guard with respect to kind of everything. And then BSA. You know, BSA, we're high financial crime.
In the world, right?
Yeah. We file a lot of SARs these days.
So then let me ask you really quick, because you mentioned this twice. You mentioned the fact that it's important to have the rapport with individuals. That way they understand that when you approach them in the compliance role, that you're not out to get them, that you're there because you're on their side and everything. So 170 people, 200 people, like that's a pretty decent number of staff, and that's going to be quite a few different departments and quite a few different managers and supervisors. How do you build the rapport with all those individuals?
You get to know them.
Okay. So it's really just taking the time, like you're emailing them or talking to them when you see them, and it's really just taking the time to be invested in them.
Yeah. So you gotta step away from the matrix of, you know, all of the bureaucracy and just get to know people and talk about their life mm-hmm. and family and what they do outside of work and try to relate that to yourself and, you know, just humanize yourself with them. And that makes a big difference.
Chat over the water cooler a little bit.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you know, exactly.
I like that.
You gotta let your hair down a little bit. Got really short hair. But,
yeah. Yeah, I can appreciate that. So then let me ask Sheldon. I know I've said that a few different times now, but one piece of advice. I mean, we've got a chunk of banks listening today, small, mid-size. One piece of advice that you could give to our listeners, what would it be?
In today's environment, for regulatory risk management. And I've been talking about this philosophically for a while, and I say this as a former service provider. Uh-huh. Every service provider, there's a ton of great ones out there, but you don't need everything.
Okay.
And I know it's a competitive market, and they love to cold call you like crazy, but you know, it helps to actually know the regs and stuff, but there's a lot of prey on people's inexperience. Mm-hmm. And when you only got 4 or 5 years of experience and you're still trying to learn all the regs, and you got service providers hounding you saying, you got to get this product or else you're not going to be able to stay up with things. You're not going to be able to do change management without this product. And I'm not disparaging anyone in particular, but there's, you know, I probably spend an hour a day just going through unsolicited calls and stuff. And I appreciate those people and I try to get to know them, but there's also a lot of value in, I'm not plugging anyone in particular, but most banks are part of a trade association. A lot of banks already have Compliance Alliance, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. Compliance Alliance is a tremendous resource and I'm not just trying to blow smoke there. You know, ABA is a tremendous resource. We happen to be members with both ABA and TBA. Think about what you already have at your disposal. You know, I get a lot of solicitations for products that are, you know, that keep up with all the regulations. And it's like, well, I've already signed up for all of the agency's emails, yeah. bulletins. You know, I already know how to go to the ECFR.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, you have to learn that. But once you get that under your belt, you don't need as much as you can get by with a lot less than there is a perception that you need to. Now, eventually, I don't know. I mean, I say that maybe in 5 years, who knows what we'll be dealing with. We'll probably right. have to hire yeah. more people. And I don't like the idea of growing the bureaucracy of compliance staff forever. But, you know, things are you know, getting more difficult. So we have to do things to stay agile, which includes hiring more people or getting new products and services to assist at some point. And so we've got to maintain efficiency while maintaining an adequate level of compliance. But I guess my overarching comment there is just, you know, try to see what you can get by with your own skill set and your own mm-hmm. people. And I'll go back to the people. Because compliance officers don't actually do compliance. You build it in around the institution and you'd be surprised what you can get done by deputizing everybody as a compliance officer in and of themselves.
I like that. So making people aware of the skills set that they have, mm-hmm. making sure that they're well educated and really like taking advantage of the tools that you already have access yep. to. I like that. I think those are great ideas. Well, Sheldon, thank you very much for joining us for today's episode. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
For the rest of our listeners, that's Banking Matters.